This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is hour number two of the Lombardi Line, back from downtown Las Vegas, our Circa Sportsbook studio. I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy rest of the week. Mike Palm is here on this Lombardi Line Friday, sweating out some live Olympic action. Olympic tennis into the final semi on serve between Novak Djokovic and Lorenzo Musetti, 4-3 in the first set there. Mike on Musetti is a small dog, winner to take on Carlos Alcaraz over the weekend in the gold medal match. We'll track a lot of other Olympic stuff as it goes on today. Also, we'll get into the Major League Baseball slate, full card on this Friday. Talk a little more NFL. We'll go out in 15 minutes here to talk to Jeff Kerr, CBS Sports NFL, who also covers the Philadelphia Eagles, break things down there. But we'll begin today. Mike, we also have Wood Palm have a qualm, which is always a highlight of Friday.
Yes, a bedpan edition.
Bedpan edition. Cannot wait for that. The real ones know what we're talking about. Or do they? I don't know. Regardless, some top headlines for today. One we did not get to in hour number one that is very significant for a Tennessee team who you would argue, Mike, probably the best position is at wide receiver or pass catcher at the very least, and are now without DeAndre Hopkins, expected to be without one of their top wide receivers for about a month or so. Hopkins going down with injury. That was the report from Paul Kaharski. Knee strain here could be 4 to 6 weeks. Certainly does not help a it's kind of a new wave offensive mind coming in when you bring in Brian Callahan, a very forward-thinking head coach as far as the play calling. We'll see for Tennessee. You know they want to press the ball down the field, but Hopkins, even if he's lost a step, that's still a big, big loss to take for Tennessee.
I think it would be a bigger loss if they had anybody that could throw him the ball.
Yeah. Bevis, you're not high on?
I'm not high on Tennessee. I think they're tough. I think the problem here is that the depth of the division is difficult for them, and that every game is going to be a war for them. They're at the bottom looking up now, where for so long they controlled this division, or at least were in the top two. The defense has gotten away from them in recent years. They've had some games where they look just absolutely awful last year. And so, yeah, certainly this affects the first part of their schedule, and it affects how you handicap the win total, and it affects how you handicap those first five markets that are now out there this year, where you can bet a team's exact number of wins in their first five games, which I think are very interesting markets.
That is very interesting. It's wonderful. I think it's
a cool way to handicap. It also gives you a little insurance on your last team to win bet too, right?
Like, yeah, no, that's a good point. Well, in Tennessee, you would think, okay, bottom of the division, schedule should at least be favorable. It's actually, based on the opposing win totals, harder schedule than Houston. Those are two of the toughest six schedules in the NFL. Tennessee's got it's a gauntlet for the Titans, and it starts out immediately. You even though Chicago is not yet really proven, that's a tough way to open, at least going on the road. What is the bigger thing to me with how Tennessee's being talked about this year, though, Mike? It's the fact that simply because Mike Vrabel's no longer there, the assumption is now that Tennessee isn't just going to bang the ball into the line every single time and not go 2 yards in a cloud of dust behind a bad offensive line, just because it's this new analytically driven system, automatically will lead to success. The reality is Will Levis was a bottom 10 quarterback by all advanced numbers, especially when he did not have time to throw, which was often because the offensive line, to me, still bottom 5 in the league. I'm not sure how you can really be confident in Tennessee taking a big step after all their O-line numbers were amidst the league's worst last year. So to now suddenly say, well, because Levis is throwing the ball more, has less protection, less deception around him as far as the running game, how is that going to lead to more success for a Tennessee team that still has a lot to prove on that side of the ball?
Look at their schedule. When's the first time they'll be favored? Week 9? Against the Patriots? Yeah. Their dog at the Bears. There'll be a small home dog to the Jets, dog at home to the Packers, dog at Dolphins, dog at home to the Colts, dog at Bills, dog at Lions. It would be a mild upset. I still would, don't you think the Jets are going to be a small favorite on the road in that game?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
2.5? 2? Is it a full field goal? I mean, some places have week 2 lines up, but
even though it's a short week for the Jets coming off Monday night in San Francisco, yes, I mean,
what are their odds to be the team with the last team to win a game? I could pull it up here, I guess.
I was pulling up week 2 for you here.
Yeah, go ahead.
To check on that. By the way, Bears 4.5-point favorites there in week 1. Jets are 4-point favorites week 2, so higher than
I think the Bears are a sneaky survivor pick in week 1.
You think so?
I do, because a lot of people won't use division games. They won't use road teams. They don't want everybody will be on Cincinnati against doing right. I think they're a sneaky pick to use the Bears. I know that's early, for Caleb Williams, but that's a pretty good spot when you consider, you know, playing against a team you normally don't play against often, yeah. An out-of-conference game.
I just looked up all 17 games for the Titans. That Patriot game, uh-huh. Week 9, that's the only game they're favored in. Okay. I mean, and that's a DK, which has posted lines on every game. The other one was the closest one was the Vikings, Week 11, where they're a one-point home dog in that. That's the state of affairs for Tennessee right now. Yeah, and that goes into, you know, it's not like Hopkins at this point in his career either. You know, this is a game-changing wide receiver, but you're already so thin at a lot of different places for Tennessee. The other part of it is, you know, this is a Tennessee team that was predicated on physicality, right? Winning games because of its defense, solid front seven. Well, think about outside of, say, a Jeffrey Simmons who's still playing at a high level, and where else are you getting production from? We already saw Arden Key, another AFC South defensive lineman, get popped with a PED six-game suspension. Key was third on the team in sacks last year. He's now out the first six games. Where's the production coming from? And it's not anymore like this Mike Vrabel-led punchy-in-the-mouth type identity either for Tennessee. So I'm down on them too.
They're the second choice here at Circa to be the last winless team. Okay. At plus 540, the favorites are the Patriots. Plus 425, maybe it gets decided in week 9.
Could it come down to week 9?
The Vikings number has come down. I looked at the Vikings. If they don't beat the Giants in week 1, I was trying to make an argument to play the Vikings here. I don't know if I can get them all the way to week 9, but they've come down. They're only 8-1 now to be the last winless team. They're the third choice of the market, Ben.
Isn't so? You mentioned Bears far as week 1 survivor, intriguing option. Look, Minnesota, it's on the road, so you usually don't want to use road survivor teams. But that is, at least to me, that's the top candidate for sort of not contrary necessarily, Mike, but more against the grain play. Because I'm really down on the Giants. To me, that's a team I bet worst team in, to be the worst team in football, which you can get. I think Circa has the best number I've seen in the market, 11-1 on that. Which is still, that's very bettable to me. Double digits on a Giants team. I power rate number 32 going into 2024 and doesn't have an easy schedule either. Minnesota's, as much as you would say, okay, really, you're going to bet Sam Darnold most likely on the road to start his Vikings career? I mean, Minnesota's being slept on. I mean, let's be real. The roster is about as good, is just as good as what Chicago has, top to bottom, if you take out the quarterback positions. But quarterback matters a lot. There's a lot of uncertainty there on Minnesota. I don't see why there is such this perceived gap between Chicago and Minnesota, 3-4 in that NFC North, when the reality is you stack up those rosters, they're very much closer to each other than, say, the gap between Chicago and Detroit and Green Bay, 1A, 1B.
Well, so you're high on the Vikings, but let me play the other side of this. They're a one-point favorite on the road against the Giants. You could bet them at 8-1 to be the last winless team and also then bet them in week 1 to cancel your ticket if they beat the Giants. Correct. It's a 1 point, right? So you can't middle yourself there.
Cannot get middle.
All right. Then after that, host 49ers, host Texans, at Packers, London against the Jets, where the Jets are a 4-point favorite. Host Lions, at Rams, host Colts, at Jags, and then at Titans.
3-game road stretch in a row. Jags, Titans, Bears all on the road.
Right.
No, it's not, not an easy schedule by any means.
I wanted to get more than 10-1, obviously, on that play, but I thought it was an interesting thinking.
I like that they get San Francisco early in the year on a short week after a presumably extremely physical game on a Monday night. I like that they get Houston early in the year where there is still likely to be some offensive line shuffling and some integration going on there. But it's a situation where, you know, across the board, Minnesota, just, you know, look at the strength of schedule if you're wondering on that by opposing win totals. I mean, it's the fourth hardest in the NFL. But the difference is second best rest advantage so far. So a lot of that is negated by at least the fact you're getting favorable rest situations. Another example would be getting Detroit off a bye. You get Indy with extra rest coming in there. You get a Monday night game at home against Chicago, back-to-back home games, weeks 13, 14, 15, in a big part of normal schedule attrition there for Minnesota.
Have you bet the Vikings in any way so far?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
I haven't. To me, the NFC North, it is, because of the division, that's where it comes into. It's more of a team. There are certain teams that I'll look to bet, you know, futures-wise, where I'm looking to bet on the variance. I still believe Minnesota's value is a little bit, you know, it's capped by the strength of the division they're in and that tough schedule. Hell, it's more a team I'm going to look to bet on game to game, Mike.
I get it. And you got to lay a lot of juice on over 6.5.
Exactly. Yeah, 100%. Other small, this is more small on the headline piece, but LA Rams, an interesting team coming into this year after making the postseason last year, but one of their key offensive linemen out at least for the entirety of the preseason here, as that is left guard Jonah Jackson. It was a Bruce Scapula. Per Adam Schefter of ESPN has a chance to return for the start of the regular season, so that's not guaranteed. We're all kind of just assuming that this will that Matthew Stafford, there's no more back, no more shoulder, no more anything, and I don't really understand why. The guy's not getting any younger for LA yet. We now, for some reason, view him as this this symbol of durability now.
Well, he was the poll of the GMs. He was voted the number one quarterback in the NFC. It's Stafford, Goff, 1-2. Two guys that were traded for each other. You're not there? Pop to the top of your head when you say who's the best quarterback in the NFC?
I mean, he's in the conversation. I mean, that's
okay.
He's right there.
With?
I mean, look, Dak Prescott doesn't get any love.
No.
Jordan Love should be at least in that mix now,
Brock
top
Purdy?
Three. Brock Purdy should. Jared
Jalen,
Goff should.
Jalen Hurts?
Yeah, Jalen Hurts. All, okay. All five of those. Let's just keep going down there. Not Sam Darnold. I'm not gonna lump him into that category. If we're both higher on Seattle, are you down on the Rams?
I think, look, they could have won that game in Detroit, right? That was a field 100%. Goal game back and forth either way. I think they had there was some fortune to the Rams season last year. I do think Seattle's a notch better than them. Doesn't mean I'm down on them, but I think Seattle's a notch better in that division.
Like, there's a lot to like about the Rams offense, but defense, lose Aaron Donald positionally. I don't see where there's a lot of optimism there yet. Look, Sean McVay, hard to bet against the guy who's been very, 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 very good in the regular season. We'll talk some more NFL topics. Break down the Philadelphia Eagles with Jeff Kerr from CBS when we come back on the Lombardi Line.
With Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Our 2024 VSiN College Football Betting Guide is your ultimate resource for the upcoming college football season, including previews of all 134 teams, a preseason top 25, power ratings, proven betting systems, and more. Sign up today and receive both a college football and NFL betting guide, plus full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, and exclusive data like our betting splits. See all of our subscription options at vsin.com/subscribe. Pick the plan that works best for you. That is vsin.com/subscribe. I'll throw a win total or two at you, Mike, in our final segment, college football-wise. We'll also have some MLB plays of the day. Good stuff to break down here. And we also have, of course, would Palm have a qualm to close out the show? You have a qualm with Lorenzo Mercedes' shot selection and a key sequence of the first set.
Ghastly.
Ghastly. I think that would be a great way to describe Musetti. Djokovic wins the first set there, 6-4, in the final men's tennis semifinal of the night there from Roland Garros. Let's go back to the NFL right now. Welcome in Jeff Kerr. We got to our progressive guest line. Covers the Philadelphia Eagles, writes on the general NFL as well for CBS Sports. We welcome in Jeff at Jeff Kerr CBS. Really the question on all of our minds, Jeff, to start today is, after watching the new kickoff rule there in the Hall of Fame game, what your takeaways were and how it has compared to what coaches, at least in Philadelphia camp, have been talking about expectations and how the new kickoff rule will impact the game this year.
Yeah, so I was talking to a couple of players about a lot of the special teams guys about the new kickoff rule and how it's going to affect things, and there weren't any concerns or anything like that. I mean, the Eagles, they practiced it, but they practiced a lot of it behind closed doors because they probably had some creativity, what they're doing with the kickoff rule. Me, personally, I think it's a work in progress. I was at the owners' meetings in March when they announced it, and I'm like, oh, so it's like the XFL rule. And they're like, well, no, it's going to be a little different than that. And they're definitely right. It was different. Very intriguing, I will say that. I like seeing more of the returns. But I still think we need a bigger sample size, and I just hope they don't do too many radical changes because of a couple preseason games.
Jeff, I want to talk about how this team rebounds after the disastrous finish last year. 10-1 at one point, obviously the collapse, and then really getting dominated in Tampa Bay in the wild card round. There were reports around the team that they had quit on Sirianni. What has he done to reestablish relationships with the players and assert himself as a leader? And second part of the questions, if things go bad early in Philly, is Nick Sirianni a candidate to be the first coach fired?
Well, there's definitely pressure on Nick Sirianni to win this year. And the Eagles basically cannot lose in the wild card round again. And in fact, I don't even know if him losing in the divisional round would be safe. It depends how they lose in the divisional round, right? If you say you're in the wild card round, you win, and then you get blown out in the divisional round. With the talent on this team, it's probably unacceptable. So I think they need to get off to a fast start. I do think Nick gets the year, though. I don't think they're going to make such a brash move. But in terms of the reports of like players quitting on him, I found that to be a little far-fetched, personally. I don't see that with a lot of the players on this team. I think they got rid of the players that I just don't think they had the swagger on that team last year. That's why I thought CJ Gardner-Johnson came back. That's why I think they got guys like Quinyon Mitchell in the draft. And they got guys that, you know, even Saquon Barkley, I think they wanted to get some leaders or, you know, some guys with more swagger on this team. So I think that's how they're going to correct it. And again, you know, we asked Nick about this in June, about maybe changing up his offseason regimen. And he goes, well, can you really argue with, you know, they were 5-0 to start last year, 10-1, they were 8-0 the year before, they were last up being team in the NFL 2 years in a row. So I think you're going to see the starters play a little more this preseason, but I don't think I haven't seen that many drastic changes with Nick. Although last night's open practice with the link was 2 hours. I wasn't expecting that.
He's Jeff Kerr joining us right now at Jeff Kerr CBS. One thing Nick Sirianni attempting to do to help shore up at least one side of the football, you bring in one of the more respected DCs we have had in the last decade. Vic Fangio comes in. At the same time, Jeff, a lot of question marks about the actual personnel that's there for Philly. When you finish bottom five in the league in run and in pass defense, where do you stand, A, on what sort of system, what the early reports are on Fangio's scheme defensively, and B, just where the personnel is at after a team that was really exposed in the home stretch of 2023?
Yeah, so when they got rid of Matt Patricia and Sean Desai and brought in Fangio, I'm like, oh, okay, well, if you're going to change up the if you're going to get rid of the people in Fangio's scheme, you might as well bring in the actual, you know what I mean? What's the old chef saying? Like, you might as well bring in the actual chef instead of, you know, a duplicate or whatever, or I almost forget the saying, but anyway, you might as well bring in the guy that actually makes the meal with Vic Fangio. And a lot of the players, like, there's a lot of Georgia guys on this team, right? They like how hard Vic Fangio coaches. They're used to that with Kirby Smart. And a lot of the rookies are liking that too, like, because that culture is established. Like, Quinyon Mitchell likes to be coached. Cooper DeJean hasn't been at practice because of his injury, but he likes to be coached hard. I'm very concerned about the linebacker position, personally. I don't think Zach Vaughn and Devin White, they're the first team guys. I'm just not sold. I think they got to find more depth at linebacker. I mean, N'Kobe Dean, I think they want him to win a first team job. We'll see. Again, still early in camp. I do like their secondary, though, a lot. They're going to have a good cornerback, too, where that's Isaiah Rogers, where that's Kaylee Ringo on the outside. Quinyon Mitchell looks like he's going to be in the slot. James Bradbury's moving to safety. Not going to be on first team, but they got depth there. They're still going to be getting Sidney Brown back at some point. Cooper DeJean will be back at some point. So there's a lot of depth at cornerback and safety. Their secondary should be a lot better. Their pass rush, Bryce Huff gets to the quarterback a lot. Nolan Smith's improved. Jalen Carter is going to be an absolute beast. Honestly, guys, if Vic can get this defense to the middle of the pack, I consider that a very, very successful year. And Eagles are probably going to win a lot of games as a result.
Jeff, who's going to emerge as the third receiver behind A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith?
Man, that's a very good question, because there's a lot of candidates for that job. So, I mean, Paris Campbell is the veteran, but Brandon Covey has been a guy that, and again, he's already an excellent punt returner, but he's a guy Jalen Hurts trusts. He gets more separation than anybody outside of A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith on that team. He's certainly considered. Johnny Wilson, six-round rookie from Florida State, he's getting reps at the first team, but he's more of an outside guy. To me, that battle was between Paris Campbell, John Ross, and Brandon Covey. And look, they've all played well, but I think Covey's kind of emerging as the leader in the clubhouse, at least after 1 week.
Jeff Kerr with us right now on our progressive guest line as we look at the rest of the league here. Jeff does a great job covering the league for CBS. You just did a really nice breakdown, too, of talking about all these early training camp stories. Is it reaction or overreaction? One story that we led the show with, it's the Justin Herbert piece of things with the plantar fascia injury out the rest of the preseason. How do you expect that to impact things in a year where there's a lot of expectation around Jim Harbaugh immediately turning around the Chargers?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I love what Jim Harbaugh's done. You can tell he's established his culture there. I know it's big for Herbert that Harbaugh is his coach, but it's unfortunate he's not going to be on the field for most of camp because you're learning a completely different offense with Greg Roman than Kellen Moore. And I think Herbert needed those weeks to kind of prepare. And I think, look, I'll give Harbaugh and Roman credit. They are going to make Justin Herbert's life easy those first couple of weeks when he's coming back. You're not going to rely on this guy to throw the ball 40, 50 times. They weren't going to do that anyway, but I think they're going to rely on their run game. The question is J.K. Dobbins healthy? Is their offensive line good enough, right? Corey Linsley retired. So can Rashawn Slater get back to being Rashawn Slater? Because he's a really good left tackle. That's what I'm concerned of. And I pointed out the Bengals last year. Look, I thought the Bengals were going to be fine because Joe Burrow's been used to that offense. Well, he came back, he wasn't fine, and they started out, what was it, 2-2, 2-3. They never really recovered. Burrow got hurt, and their season was kind of lost. And they did pick up their stride at the end of the year, but they didn't make the playoffs. The Chargers are very fortunate that they got the Panthers and the Raiders the first 2 weeks because they can – they should be able to start 2-0, but did they slip up? And again, you can slip up to an Antonio Pierce coach team very easily. And you don't know what Carolina is going to be. It can be a very ugly start because you got Kansas City and Pittsburgh right after that.
Jeff, we got about a minute left. Is it really worth a bet that Justin Fields takes the first snap for the Steelers?
I think that's gaining momentum. If you want to take your bet now, I think I would do it personally. Because Russell Wilson's been out, and Wilson's going to get every chance in the world to win that job. But if George Pickens likes Justin Fields, if the younger players like Justin Fields, then if Arthur Smith is starting to get even more intrigued by Justin Fields, this is supposed to be a developmental year for him. I still think the Steelers are going to be arrogant enough to have Russell. I still think that they're going to be arrogant enough for Russell Wilson to start, but I would definitely take a bet on that because you never know.
I mean, Wilson was minus 1,000 in a lot of places. Look, he's very, very well favored compared to a lot of these other quarterback battles. Great insights from Jeff Kerr. Follow him at Jeff Kerr CBS. Great to have you on, Jeff. Really appreciate the time.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
When we come back, full baseball slate on this Friday. Some big, big series, some team debutantes after the All-Star break. We'll break them all down with Mike when we come back. It is the Friday edition of the Lombardi Line final half hour for us with Mike Palm. I'm Ben Wilson, and we are excited to break down a full Friday baseball card here today, Mike. We're running out of time where baseball still, takes center stage on the daily card. Some would argue it hasn't for some time with the Olympics getting underway. But a lot, what's really the big part of today, and we're just getting underway now at Wrigley Field there, debut for Eric Fetty for St. Louis. And there's a number of guys making their debuts today here. Milwaukee's Frankie Montas makes his team debut. I mean, Brewers just desperate for pitching right now going against Jake Irvin of the Nationals. Anything in particular? Like, to me, it's kind of like we're tracking these guys anyway throughout the season, Mike. So to me, it's always I'm generally treading lightly in these guys' first starts with new teams. But it kind of depends on the player. Like, I'd have much more confidence saying backing a Fetty today than I would a Montas, where you're kind of uncertain as to what sort of role you're actually getting, how many innings he'll be able to eat there for Milwaukee.
How about a pitcher pitching in a league he hasn't pitched in before? That's so it. American to National or National to American.
Yeah.
That's the spot of my play today.
Yeah.
And it's Paul Blackburn's first start for the Mets against Tyler Anderson, who I still think is having a terrific year that nobody's talking about. Under five, first five innings tonight. Mets at Angels, a high total, 9.
Blackburn used to the AL West from the
pitched there. Yep.
Yeah.
Pitched in that park before many times. Solid numbers while he's been healthy this year. That's the spot that drew my attention. A game that probably not a ton of people are going to focus on, even though it's New York versus LA. But I thought that was the best spot tonight. I thought the total was a little bit high there.
it seems too, like, for the last maybe four or five Tyler Anderson starts, because he was amidst the highest negative regression pitchers in all of baseball, people continue to bet that it is going to happen. And it started to come back down to that way, but it's, you know, we always say at this point in the year, right, it's August. Certain guys, because they've been able to outpitch their peripherals for so long, it's not a guarantee that they will all of a sudden just come back down to earth. Or on the other side, just because a pitcher is guaranteed or looks to have a lot of positive regression in his template, it's not like a guarantee that he'll all of a sudden, you know, turn into Cy Young second half of the year. So generally tread carefully on that stuff now that we have so much of data behind. But yeah, the Paul Blackburn signing, I mean, all these A's guys, I mean, nobody's really looked at him at all. It's funny how the White Sox pitchers, the top guys, get so much more attention because they stick out with how bad the rest of the roster is. Yet, you know, a team like the A's has actually been hitting. Mm-hmm. They had a really, really good month of July in general, and Blackburn has been a part of that. A very under-the-radar pickup there for the Mets.
Yeah, I know the regression folks talk about Lugo, and I thought he pitched a little bit in tough luck in that game against the Cubs last Saturday, and that, you know, he got them to the two outs in the seventh, and then they took him out, and the reliever gave up a homer, and he gets the three earned run tacked on. Eight solid last night against the Tigers. There's the pitching matchup of the day. Yeah. Reagan's against
Skubal,
the two hard-throwing left-handers in Detroit tonight.
And Skubal, who, again, people kind of assumed, okay, when will regression happen for him? He's done a very good job for the most part outside of a couple of blips on the radar, Mike. Now, he's still been really, really good. If you're looking at how teams have gone, you know, against lefties too, if we're just comparing, you know, in all honesty, I mean, look, Detroit has struggled most of the year. I've kind of looked at a lot of these numbers since the All-Star break, now that we've had a couple week sample size. Detroit bottom six facing lefties, and Kansas City is 19th, both sub 100 WRC plus teams, and it's why you are really seeing, I didn't get involved simply because the premium now is very, very great. You're down to 7, and that's juiced at most books minus 115 to 120. So nothing I wanted to do with, but I totally get why it is that way. And especially too, first five, you start looking at taxes and that sort of stuff. I've started just to go away, Mike, from anything that's 3.5 or lower. This is 3.5, heavy juice to the under, so nothing for me there, as much as I agree with how low those prices are set.
Yeah. Interesting series, the D-backs, Pirates, they played in at Phoenix.
Yep.
And now, it's a big series in the National League wild card.
Huge, yes.
Huge. It's really the series of the weekend, to me, with the most importance. And if before the year you said the first weekend in August it would be Pirates and D-backs would be the critical series.
No doubt.
Fod or Pafod, I still don't know. It's half and half to me.
You're good.
Pafod and Ortiz has really been good, Luis Ortiz.
Yep.
Interesting matchup there, D-backs. Small favorite, a little bit of money coming in on the Pirates here, but certainly a series to monitor. Pirates held their own in Houston to stay afloat in this race, and the D-backs with that incredible comeback Monday night and then rolled through the rest of the series against the Nats.
Yep, that's actually the one bet I have pregame on the card here. I went first five under, four and a half
there
here.
You go.
Look, Luis Ortiz on the mound, last five, when he's been into the starting rotation, his five starts, his worst start was against Arizona last time out where he gave up three earned runs. Hasn't given up more than three earned in his last five starts so far. And that's where, as much as you look at Ortiz's numbers and you go, okay, 2.75 ERA, but advanced numbers indicate he's gotten fortunate, it's hard to quantify that when most of his numbers have been out of the pen. So it's a 4.40 expected fielding and pen and pitching. I don't put in much stock into that when it's a guy whose bulk work has come in a bullpen situation. Fott, to me, has been a bet on most of the years. He has been a guy trending toward positive regression. I have gotten burned in certain spots with him, but I don't think either of us would be afraid right now, especially of a Pirate lineup that, you know, has been very, very hit or miss this year, and extremely streaky to that end, especially in a series that is going to feel like a playoff atmosphere. I will go first five under there. Expect a KG start early.
I thought it was really intriguing the other night in Houston that they brought in Presley to face all those left-handers. And that's the game the Pirates rallied in and then won that game before Framber had the great start the next night.
Yeah, Pittsburgh right in the mix right now as far as where things go there. How about the other big series, too, in the AL? You look at you go to the other league, Baltimore, who's been scuffling a little bit, trying to keep their lead over the Yankees in the AL East. Baltimore in Cleveland against Carlos Carrasco tonight. Seeing how the odds have shifted there in that matchup. We're currently seeing Carrasco and the Guardians get some interest. That's actually, depending on the book, flipped favorites here overnight, Mike. Mostly pick'ems, though, still out there in the market.
Yeah, I was impressed with Lively last night.
It's been good.
He got in a little bit of trouble in the first, and really after that, powered his way through that lineup, and they banged out, you know, they're averaging 6 runs a game at home, the Guardians. So very impressive. I get it, Carrasco tonight, you give the Orioles a slight favoritism, but I'd look, if anything, I'd look at the Guardians at home again.
Sure. It makes a lot of sense. Cleveland, and it's been Cleveland and Milwaukee, the two teams who keep wondering.
I think they're both managers of the years in the two respective leagues.
Yeah.
Easily. Who else would right now. Yeah. Easily.
Steven Vogt, awesome. And what's ironic is the Brewers wanted Vogt, but they didn't get their ducks in a row to even really conduct an interview. He'd already accepted the Guardians job. That was the Brewers' top candidate. Mm-hmm. They end up settling, quote unquote, on Pat Murphy,
who's
been amazing.
Council wanted Pat Murphy to come with him to Chicago.
Yeah.
Pat Murphy's been terrific.
He's been awesome.
They are a very fundamentally sound team. And he handles that bullpen well. I think one of the advantages they have over teams is that 6-7-8, their bullpen is very solid. They can throw multiple guys at you. It's a deep bullpen. And, yeah, I mean, they're going to win that division. It's so hard for these other teams that just bounce around against each other, and they really don't gain any momentum, right? They'll win 2 and lose 3 and then lose 3, and Cubs play the Cardinals, Reds. You know, it's just really difficult to make up any ground. Mathematically, Milwaukee sits in such a nice spot.
Sure thing. A 5.5-game lead, I should say, for the Brewers down this home stretch. Really, it was really nice of Craig Counsell, a lifelong Brewer fan, played for the Brewers, grew up in Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin. You know, kind of under the radar, Mike, that he would – it's the ultimate – sacrifice to go to your division rival and then just tank that team while taking hundreds of millions of dollars. I think that was really smart by Craig Counsell.
We all bought it. Hook, line, and sinker. He was going to try to win this year.
He's just got that straight look on his face. You would have no idea. Big credit to Craig Counsell. Took hundreds of millions of the Cubs' dollars to just tank that franchise. Job well done, Craig. Props to you.
In the debate segment that I have with Patrick, against Dustin with Patrick.
Yeah.
One of the questions was, if you could own any of the major sports teams, which one would it be? And Dustin said, I would own the Braves just to destroy the organization. Because as a Mets fan, they've caused him so much grief through the years.
Yeah, I mean, I understand it. Yeah, that's very, very, very fair. For the most part, the biggest matchups on the card tonight. I'm also interested, too, you know, the A's had this great month of July. I don't think either of us really believe, though, Mike, that is going to necessarily continue as we continue the final home stretch of the season. Just looking at what, you know, the A's are still at. I mean, they've even now over the full basis of the season, they're about a middle of the pack offensive team. And we've seen the market continue to fade the Dodgers every single night. It's one I haven't bet yet. I'm waiting to see how far this drops, because Gavin Stone, who I've really been a fan of for the Dodgers, opens $1.60 down to about $1.40. Even minus 139 in a couple books, Mike. That's one, if you see that continue to drop, probably another 5 cents or so. I've kind of been lately looking to bet these Dodger lines that get really, really bet to the other side, where I just don't really understand the fade that's going on for LA. As much as they've been struggling against teams like Oakland with good pitching, when Stone on the mound, it's a spot I would like.
Yeah, you get them really cheap tonight, right? If you had previewed this game 2 months ago, you'd have said the Dodgers were $2, right? So you get him. Stone's been consistent.
He has been.
I think he has a spot in their rotation in the playoffs, right? Has to be. I mean, will Kershaw get back to where they need him to be and then be healthy? Do you know that Glasnow has already surpassed his most innings pitched in the season right now? The guy's never been healthy for a whole year. It is really amazing. I think Flaherty will be their ace by far.
Don't you think Kershaw will just end up being like that, whatever, that utility reliever? They'll just use him wherever?
No, they won't. They'll let him start even if they know he's going to go 3 innings. He's earned it.
Yeah, well, he has earned it.
He's earned it.
For optimal success, I would argue. The flip side.
Well, the analytics is not about optimal success.
Mike Palm. What do you have at qualm? We'll run down a bunch of topics with Mike next.
With Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All sorts of great content is up right now at our new look website, optimized for mobile, VSiN.com. Matt Youmans with a deep dive article on scouting all the quarterback depth charts for NFL preseason. Well worth your time, along with best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state betting tools, and our college football and NFL betting guides. Check those all out right now at VSiN.com.
Some bets just don't sit right with Mike Palm. You took all the money you made and bet it against the Harlem Globetrotters? Are you considering a bet that would make him sick?
I'm going to throw up.
It's time to ask Mike, would Palm have a qualm?
I love that animation for Would Palm Have a Qualm. That's new since I last hosted with you on a Friday.
They just keep improving things around here.
Yeah, it's good. Clearly, that's great. Really well, really well done. Ryan Hunter with the voice, the soundtrack of that, leading it. Would Palm have a qualm? Today, it is College Football NFL Parlay Edition. So, get ready for that, Mike. We start locally where we are in Las Vegas. UNLV football. Great year under Barry Odom last year. They kept Barry Odom. They are the third betting favorite on the board in the Mountain West. UNLV to make the Mountain West title game. Definitely live. Parlayed with the Raiders to make the playoffs. Almost 10-1.
I puke on that.
That's disgusting.
Stephanie always really, she bets to make this about physical illness.
Justin Emery doing a great job.
It's a feeling of physical, but it's having trepidation over it. I say no because of this second part of it. How do you make the playoffs without a quarterback? They have no quarterback. They're heading into the year without a quarterback. They got a backup, Minshew. He's a nice backup. He's like Fitzpatrick. He can come in and spell you for four games. What evidence have they seen that Aiden O'Connell is a pro quarterback? I really would like to know that. I didn't see it at Purdue, and I certainly didn't see it last year. They won a game where he didn't complete a pass after the first quarter against the Chiefs on Christmas Day. I have a big qualm with this.
Big qualm. Antonio Pierce is his optimal dreamlike strategy is just run the ball into the line for 3 yards every single time.
They punted five times in the game. They had to win to get the Colts. They punted five times from their 45 to the Colts 40 in that 15-yard range on 4th-and-1 or 2.
Unreal.
They punt in a game they had to win late in the year to get the wild card. Punted five times.
Nobody said anything when he was an interim.
He's a player's coach.
By week six, Mike, you're going to see a lot of, especially from the people who actually watch the coaching decisions in-game. I mean, Pierce is going to get raked through the coals this year as far as in-game management. Okay, this has the shortest odds of any of these we'll talk about. Okay. Maryland football. Terps, over 4.5 conference wins parlayed with the Ravens to win over 12.5 games this year.
I don't like the Ravens. I don't like the second part of this. I'm okay with Maryland. I wouldn't discount it because of Maryland. Baltimore has a lot going against them. All right. They have the schedule. They have the fact that not only do they lose starters on the defensive side of the ball, and they got guys to come in, but they haven't played in a starting role. They lose their defensive coordinator. I get it. Harbaugh's a good coach in continuity. They have a defensive coordinator who's never called a play at any level, never called a play. Michael Lombardi makes a great point about the decline of Justin Tucker. And you go and look at his numbers over 50 yards last year. Could he be done? We don't know. But kickers is not a steady decline. There's a plateau and a cliff, right? And then finally, is there any worse way to lose a conference title game than totally abandoning your identity? Down one score, all of a sudden you can't throw the ball. Oh, and by the way, what's wrong with Lamar Jackson? What's wrong with him?
He's getting sick.
He's getting sick all the time.
Something in the crab.
I mean, what is it? Is there something wrong with him? And I don't know if it's COVID-3 or there's something else, if it's a blood disease. I don't know, but there's something wrong with the guy. Qualm.
Qualm on Ravens. Also, if we're talking just general strategy on betting futures this year, in the AFC, win total over is probably not the way you want to go. I mean, it's more like playoffs, I would say, AFC title odds, because it is such a gauntlet. I mean, the Ravens could be 10-7 and be totally fine, but it's a very, very tough conference this year. With that in mind, let's go down to one other one. This is the one I want to sell you on, Mike. I like this one. Ohio State to win the national title. Pretty confident.
I thought you were going to the Georgia Falcons one.
Well, I wanted to skip that because I
thought there's a zero missing. How could it only be 9-1? The Falcons should be more than that to be the one seed.
That one is Falcons to get the one seed Georgia. And Georgia to go undefeated. Yeah, we're not. We have no desire there. But Ohio State to win the national title, which regardless of what you think about Ohio State, I mean, they're almost guaranteed to be in the playoff and likely to be in that second round at the very minimum. And then the Browns to make the playoffs, 11-1. And I like Cleveland this year. To me, very underrated roster. But it comes down to Deshaun Watson, a quarterback, as the one weakness on that team. Can you get even mediocre quarterback play out of him? I believe that Cleveland can. They can scheme that to be the case this year in an AFC North that we just talked about the deficiencies for Baltimore. I'm not totally sold on Cincinnati immediately ascending to the top in that division. Cleveland is a wild card team. Makes a lot of sense to me. 11-1.
I'm not in love with the Browns because I no one can explain to me the road home differential defensively. You can't explain it. And then Jameis Winston going to lead him to the playoffs? You really believe Deshaun Watson will return to his Clemson form?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying middle of the pack.
I'm saying no qualm because they could make the playoffs. They could be a 6 or 7 seed. I don't think they're falling off a cliff. I could see them being very good at home and stealing a few games on the road. I can see them winning 9 or 10 games. So I don't have a qualm with this. I'm not ready to back the Browns.
Yeah. Could the explanation be as simple of Cleveland, maybe like Cleveland and defensive coordinator Jim Schwartz got a little ahead of their skates by getting so much, you know, huge turnover plays against the bad quarterbacks at home, that they maybe they flipped the pendulum too much, got too confident, too aggressive in their scheming, and as a result started giving up massive plays on the road. That to me that's a logical explanation, that they were so, I mean, remember we had articles coming out, I remember talking to Michael about it. This was all the numbers were that it was one of the great historical defenses ever, the Cleveland Browns. Maybe that got to Jim Schwartz's head a little bit from a play calling perspective. That's the best way I would describe it. Okay. But they're still really good. Okay, we move on. Michigan, over 9 wins in 2024, parlayed with the Lions doing the NFC, 12-1.
Trying to get to 10 wins for Michigan. I think it's really tough. They lost so much. They're not going to beat Texas. All right.
If you say, because 9-3 feels like a very logical record, which then in that case,
yeah, but it's over. If this was over 8.5, I don't know what the odds would change. I think this is tough.
Well, my point is you're basically betting on, okay, is this just the Lions to win the NFC bet? Because odds are there's a really good chance that Michigan part of it just gets knocked out based on how we break down the schedule. And this becomes a bet at 5-1, 6-1 on the Lions to win the NFC.
Is USC bad? I mean, Michigan's a big favorite against them. I have a qualm as the way it's written at over 9. Qualm.
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 We found one no qualm so far. It's Ohio State, that cross sport parlay. Not that we would be making any of these bets, by the way. This is the list we have today. How about on the same token, Big Ten, Penn State make the college football playoff. Yeah. And the Eagles to win the NFC.
Yes and no. Second part, no good. Eagles aren't winning the NFC.
You're not in on the Eagles.
No, I think they're the fourth best team in the NFC. I think you have to go a long way from the team quitting, which I think there's some element of that. They're calling Jalen Hurts' names on the bench. I mean, there's some deep-seated problems there. I don't think they got rid of everybody, as our guests would suggest. So I think there's a lot to overcome to be better than the Packers, Lions, or 49ers.
It's always concerning to me when you have a team that statistically was so bad in one area, and you start looking at positional rankings across the board, whether it's PFF, Sharp Football, and all of a sudden it's just you wipe out anything that happened poorly in the previous year, and you go, oh yeah, no, they're fine. They're going to be top half of the league across the board.
How about this one we didn't get to yet, the 103-1?
Ewers to win Heisman and CJ Stroud to win MVP.
No qualm. No qualm.
Is that a Kevin Malone thought of if it's over? His is 1,000-1. You bet it. 100-1.
Why can't Stroud win MVP?
I'm not saying he can't.
I think the Heisman race is wide open. We just talked about all the weapons they put around Stroud. Now, if Diggs is not a sour character there and a bad actor, I think that can be a really good offense. And that team could win. Now, what is it? They have to be a 1 or a 2 seed that's traditionally to be the... I think 103-1 is very reasonable price for that.
Pricing,
that parlay.
Probably, you know, it's only triple digit, but it's the most appealing of anything we have here. Our last one. Does Mike Palm have a qualm with this? The story of Mary Jacobs, 77-year-old in England, who is the owner of what might be Europe's largest collection of bedpans, trying to find him a new home after they failed to sell at auction. Do you have a qualm with buying collectibles like old bedpans or not?
Well, what would be her attachment to it? This story to me is ludicrous.
Apparently, she saw a slipper bedpan come in, bought it for 50 pence, and that was the start. She wanted to collect something different. It snowballed from there. That was her quote.
My aunt collected precious moments. You know what a precious moment is? Are you too young for that?
I'm too young for that.
They have these little figurines. They're all like little boys and girls that are angels. They're like this big. They have it in Missouri, somewhere like Hannibal, Missouri.
Missouri. I've got a game there.
Precious Moments Museum and everything. I'm out on bedpans. Qualm.
You're out on bedpans.
Qualm.
Hometown of one Mark Twain. Called two games there. Hannibal, Missouri. Right on the river. And Northeast Missouri. Great stuff. Mike Palm, always a pleasure being with you, sir.
Yeah, we'll have to do it again tomorrow.
Yeah, we will do it again tomorrow. For Justin Emery, our producer Jeremy Wengler, our technical director, whole rest of the team here at Circa, we say so long in this edition of the Lombardi Line. Sharp Money coming your way right after this.